Good afternoon or good evening, depending on when you listen to this. My name is Peter, and today I'll be reading from the Decatur Herald and Review, the e-edition dated June 22nd, 2026. I will start with three very different front-page articles. The first one is about the Shakespeare Festival. It's titled Magic and Fate. Festival celebrates connection to the past in its 2026 season by Caitlin Klepek. And there are two photos from rehearsals of Romeo and Juliet. The first photo reads Grace Morey as Juliet and Isaac Daniel as Romeo doing a rehearsal for Romeo and Juliet at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival Thursday, June 18th, 26 at the Ewing Theater in Bloomington. The main stage production directed by Illinois State University alumni Maria Amenabar Farias opens June 26 and runs through July 31st. Illinois Shakespeare Festival, Bloomington. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival is back, presenting two Shakespearean classics, along with one American classic, in conjunction with the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. This year, the festival is kicking off the summer season with William Shakespeare's The Two Gentlemen of Verona and Romeo and Juliet, plus Thornton Wilder's Our Town. The production of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Our Town will also mark the first time an American classic play has been performed for the festival, held annually at Ewing Theater, 48 Sunset Road in Bloomington. "I just love it," said Robert Quinlan, artistic director for the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. "It's one of my favorite plays, but I also think for the 250th anniversary of America, it was nice to do an American play." The festival begins Wednesday, June 24th, with a preview of the Shakespearean comedy The Two Gentlemen of Verona, which premieres July 27th. A preview of Romeo and Juliet is slated for Thursday, June 25th, and the grand opening performance of the classic tragedy at 7:30 p.m. Friday. A preview for Our Town is set for July 9th before it premieres July 10th. Productions will continue through August with additional free events at Ewing Cultural Center, including the Courtyard Music Series, Theater for Young Audiences performing Get Set, Romeo and Juliet, and pre-show talks known as Bard Basics. Tickets for preview performances start at $21, while other shows start at $38. For tickets and the full schedule of performances, visit illinoisshakes.com or call the box office at 309-438-2535. Connection and Fate. When choosing the plays for this year's festival, Quinlan said, although all three shows are different, they share common themes. Each follows the concept of fate and the stars, reminding audiences of a connection to the past, he said. When you're on that stage and you're looking up at the stars, we're looking up at the same stars that Thornton Wilder was looking at. It's the same stars that William Shakespeare was looking at, Quinlan said. Longtime festival set designer John Stark agreed. Some of the most beautiful nights of theater I've had are out there when the stars are out. I think it's a pretty special thing. These productions also follow common themes of humanity, youth, community, life choices, and rebellion, producers said. Producers and actors spoke to the relatability of Our Town, which is set in the early 1900s in an imaginary small town called Grover's Corner. The play looks at what it is to be an American, a member of a community, a human being, in really interesting and compelling ways, Quinlan said. I think it's a nice way to reflect on our roles as Americans in 2026. Director Laurie Adams said it is exciting to bring an American classic into the mix this year. Witnessing Magic. While the two Shakespearean plays are both set in Italy, The Two Gentlemen of Verona uses color, paying tribute to the vibrant Renaissance, while Romeo and Juliet is more modern, stripped of color, creating a more bleak environment. Maria Amenábar Farias, director of Romeo and Juliet, said she wanted to play around with color for the costumes to emphasize themes of independence for the young characters who are experiencing heightened feelings of freedom for the first time. Actors and producers alike reflect on their connection to the generations of performers who have staged these plays and spoken these same lines in the last 400 years, but today are finding ways to bring a fresh interpretation that allows audiences hear them anew. Grace Morey, who is playing the role of Juliet, says, "There's something very spiritual about doing it because it connects you to all your acting ancestors." Stark noted that all around the world, people are still performing Shakespeare's great works. Amenábar Farias added, "We're sitting here listening to the same text that people so long ago sat and listened to and were affected by, and we are experiencing that same journey in a different context or lens. It's like witnessing magic." This year's Juliet is returning for her second year in the festival. Morey said she believes that even though people know the stories of the classics, they are different every time, and Amenábar Farias agrees. In watching the rehearsals, Quinlan said that even though he knows the play's ending, he still watches with hope that the main characters will make it through. And the children who attended the theater for young audience shows will be able to see that happy ending in Get Set, Romeo and Juliet. The show, which is written by Nancy Steele Brokaw and directed by Laurie Adams, opens Thursday. This performance, designed specifically for children, will give the audience an interactive experience and the option to rewind and try different choices along the way. On June 26 and July 31st, this festival will host online t-shirt printing in honor of the opening and closing of Romeo and Juliet, letting patrons pick whether they want to be a Montagu or a Capulet for the night. Contact Caitlin Klepek at 309-820-3345. Illinois Shakespeare Festival, when? June 24th through August 1st, all shows for the main three productions begin at 7:30, while theater for young audiences shows begin at 10 a.m. The Two Gentlemen of Verona, June 24th, 27th, and 28th, July 11th, 16, 19, 21, 24, and 29, and August 1st. Romeo and Juliet, June 25 through 26, July 12, 14, 17, 23, 26, 28, and 31. Our Town, July 9, 10, 15, 18, 22, 25, and 30. Get Set, Romeo and Juliet, Theater for Young Audiences, June 25th and 7th, July 2nd, 9, 11, 16, 18, 23, 25, and 30, August 1. Where? Ewing Cultural Center and Ewing Theater, 48 Sunset Road in Bloomington. Tickets are $21 through $62. Season passes and group rates are available. Order online at illinoisshakes.com/tickets or call the box office at 309-438-2535. The next article takes us into the political international scene, and it's titled "Trump Threatens Iran with New Strikes. Vice President Attends Talks in Switzerland." Hameera Pamuk, Dave Graham, and Tala Ramadan, Reuters. Mideast, Birkenstock, Switzerland. President Donald Trump threatened Sunday to restart the war with Iran, even as Vice President J.D. Vance met Iranian officials for the first talks under a peace deal, overshadowed by Tehran's announcement if it closed the Straits of Hormuz. The talks in the Swiss mountain resort of Birkenstock, owned by mediator Qatar, were the first to be held under the terms of a memorandum of understanding achieved a week ago. It calls for the strait to be reopened and a halt to all hostilities, including in Lebanon, which U.S. ally Israel invaded in March. But Iran, arguing that Washington failed to meet its commitment to halt fighting in Lebanon, said it shut the strait again and Sunday's talk would not cover substantive issues such as Iran's nuclear program. Iran must immediately stop their highly protected proxies in Lebanon from causing trouble. If they don't, we'll hit Iran very hard again, just like we did last week, only harder, Trump said, an apparent reference to the escalation he ordered earlier this month. At the talks where U.S. and Iranian officials met in the presence of Qatari mediators, Vance played down the impact of violence in Lebanon, saying progress was made towards ending hostilities there in recent days. "These things are always a little bit messy," he said. Despite the announcement Friday of a new ceasefire in Lebanon, there was scant sign of an end to fighting there. Iran said Saturday that as a result it again shut the strait, whose closure for nearly 4 months caused the biggest disruption of global energy supplies in history. U.S. officials disputed whether the strait was closed, but commercially available shipping data showed an immediate impact. Only a single small tanker crossed the strait, with its location signaling transponders on after Iran's announcement, compared with dozens of ships in recent days when traffic began returning to pre-war levels. One Iran's Fars news agency cited a military source saying Sunday that no new permits were being issued for ships to cross until further notice. Throughout the war, many shipping companies said it was too dangerous to sail through the strait without Iran's permission. Iran also said that there could be no start to the next phase of talks, including over its nuclear program, until Lebanon fighting ends and it gets promised economic benefits. Vance briefly appeared Sunday in front of traveling media as he, envoy Steve Witkoff, and President Donald Trump, son-in-law Jared Kushner, met Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif and Pakistan's Army Chief Field Marshal Azim Munir. Warm greetings were exchanged and Vance said, "What's up, man?" as he shook hands with Munir and hugged him. "My brother," Munir said, as he reached out to Witkoff and embraced him. As has happened several times with major developments affecting the global economy during the war, Iran's announcement that the strait was closed again took place on the weekend, with markets closed, delaying the impact on oil prices until Monday. Trump said he agreed to last week's memorandum of understanding to avert a global economic depression from high oil prices caused by shutting the strait. Oil prices tumbled over the past week to levels unseen since the war started. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei said Sunday's talk would last for just one day. Since Washington failed to guarantee a ceasefire in Lebanon, the talks would cover only the implementation of a memorandum itself and not the substantive issues foreseen for the next stage of negotiations, Baghaei said. The memorandum foresees 60 days of talks on issues such as curbing Iran's nuclear program in return for the lifting of international sanctions. Before those issues are resolved, Iran expects to receive initial economic benefits such as sanction waivers and the unfreezing of blocked assets. President Masoud Pezeshkian, quoted by Fars, expressed optimism that talks with the U.S. could provide a strong basis for economic growth. He said the first achievement of the negotiations was restoring access to some of Iran's financial resources. Vance told reporters before his departure that he hoped to make progress on the nuclear issue as well as a ceasefire in Lebanon. More than 1 million people have been driven from their homes in Lebanon since March by Israel's invasion. However, in a possibly positive sign on Sunday, Reuters journalist in southern Lebanon saw some of the heaviest traffic since the memorandum was signed, with residents returning to homes they fled in the south. Some stood behind cars backed up on the highway and waved Hezbollah flags. Reuters journalists in southern Lebanon also saw rescuers Saturday carrying wounded at the sites of Israeli attacks, which have reduced swaths of Lebanon towns and villages to ruins that residents say resemble the Gaza Strip. Lebanese authorities said 20 people were killed Saturday, but there was no immediate report of major violence on Sunday morning. The army said Sunday that specialized units were still working to dismantle unexploded Israeli bombs weighing 1,000 and 2,000 pounds that were dropped on southern towns. The third article on the front page of today's paper is titled "Lenders Brace for Debanking Probe Results" in the money section by Saeed Azwar, Nupur Anand and Chris Prentice from Reuters. It shows a photo, a general view of the White House in Washington, D.C. on July 20th, 25. New York. Big U.S. lenders are bracing for further public scrutiny over whether they improperly closed customer accounts as a top watchdog wraps up a review that is expected to name and shame banks and result in disciplinary action, said several people with knowledge of the matter. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency is poised to publish in coming weeks the findings of a supervisory review of whether lenders, including J.P. Morgan and Bank of America, cut off or denied services on religious or political grounds, often dubbed debanking. It has also examined whether lenders denied services to legitimate conservative-aligned sectors such as fossil fuel companies, gun makers, and crypto, the people said. Debanking generally refers to the process whereby a financial institution cuts off or restricts services to individuals or businesses. Following Republican President Donald Trump's order last year, authorities have been cracking down on what Trump has characterized as politically motivated debanking pushed by Democrats, creating headaches for lenders who deny the claims and say they have merely been following risk management rules. Republicans have for years been ramping up pressure on Wall Street banks to drop what they describe as left-leaning woke policies that they say are discriminatory, and Trump says he has personally had accounts closed for such political reasons. The growing pressure has led some banks to rethink long-standing policies for lending and other account services, according to one of the People and Banks' public announcements. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington is also probing lenders over debanking, according to two of the people. In December, the OCC published a preliminary report stating that 9 big banks from 2020 to 2023 had policies of restricting services to some industries and groups or of requiring excessive risk management screens, often to avoid the reputational risk associated with banking them. The agency said it was reviewing those policies and around 100,000 related complaints. Since then, it has conducted multiple rounds of inquiries, with some lenders still fielding queries in recent weeks, four people said. The watchdog's questions have focused on banks' decision-making process for providing and revoking services that have been extremely detailed, they added. In its full review, the OCC is expected to highlight specific banks and cases, adding they anticipate the watchdog will escalate some to formal sanctions, two people said. Those could include a private supervisory notice demanding the banks fix their lending policies, or even public enforcement actions, which would likely be settled with penalties. The OCC said it is also scrutinizing Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Capital One, U.S. Bank, PNC, TD Bank, and BMO Bank. Spokespersons for the nine banks declined to comment. Lenders said they close accounts for various reasons, including unusual activity, paperwork problems, or because the account is not being used for its stated purpose, but that political leanings are not one of them. The sources declined to be identified because the matter is sensitive. An OCC spokesperson declined to comment. Speaking to lawmakers this month, Comptroller Jonathan Gold said the agency was investigating debanking and exploring a potential legal theory of liability. We are well advanced in that process, he added. A White House spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment. Trump, in January 2025, accused J.P. Morgan and Bank of America of discriminating against conservatives, and he and affiliated businesses are suing J.P. Morgan and Capital One over account closures. The banks deny the accusations. Another complaint that received attention among Republicans came from Indigenous Advance Ministries, a Memphis-based Christian charity that works in Uganda. In 2023, it accused BofA to closing its accounts on religious grounds. In response to scrutiny from Republicans, state attorneys general over that complaint, BofA said Indigenous Advance was engaged in debt collection and that the bank does not serve that sector or small businesses that operate overseas. The charity did not respond to a request for comment. Sam Brownback, a Republican who leads the National Committee for Religious Freedom, has said that in 2022, J.P. Morgan closed an account linked to him on religious grounds. J.P. Morgan said it was closed to inadequate information. Crypto companies, which with a general view of a White House on donating heavily to Trump's election campaign, also complained that banks shunned their industry. Some lenders are shifting their policies. J.P. Morgan removed restrictions on banking a number of sectors, including on rifles for civilian use, according to a letter the bank sent to firearm group NSSF in January this year. The letter, which cites Trump's executive order, has not previously been reported. Citi last year also dropped the policy that restricted services to retail clients selling firearms. The sources said it was unclear on what grounds regulators could pursue potential enforcement action, since many of the groups the OCC flagged would not be protected by fair lending laws. We're now turning to a short crime story on page 2 of today's Herald and Review, titled Grayson Applies for Early Release Related to the Sonia Massey Murder. And there's a photo of Sean Grayson, a former Illinois sheriff's deputy who was convicted in the fatal shooting of Sonia Massey during a call for help in her home, poses for a jail booking photograph at Sangamon County Detention Facility in Springfield on July 17, 2024. Subtitle, Ex-Deputy Convicted of Second-Degree Murder in October. By Steve Speary, Springfield State Journal Register. Springfield. The Sangamon County State's attorney confirmed that the convicted murderer of Sonia Massey will have a hearing before the Illinois Prison Review Board July 31st, seeking its release. State's attorney, State's Attorney John Millhiser said Sean Grayson, a former Sangamon County Sheriff's deputy convicted of second-degree murder in October, filed a pro se application with the board which in turn advised Millhiser's office. Details of the hearing weren't immediately available. The State Journal Register contacted the PRB late in the afternoon, June 18th. Sonia Massey, the cousin, Sante Massey, the cousin of Sonia Massey, a 36-year-old black woman and the mother of two children who was fatally shot inside her home in the Cabbage Patch neighborhood, an unincorporated area of Sangamon County in 2024, confirmed to the SJ-R that he talked to a victim's advocate representative of Millhiser's office Thursday. "I had a physical reaction when I learned about the hearing," Massey admitted. "I'm not going to be silent about my cousin, Sonia. How does he get afforded these things? He's a killer. It's sickening. This is our judicial system." A type of hearing Grayson may have applied for under the Joe Coleman Act / medical release hearings. According to the PRB website, that is for individuals in custody suffering from a terminal illness or medical incapacitation to apply for early release. Grayson, 32, who was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in 2023 and now has stage 4 rectal cancer and cancer in his liver and lungs. Grayson is serving a 20-year sentence. He's been held in a facility out of state. Millhiser said he has had not seen Grayson's hearing application. Sante Massey said Millhiser's office talked to other Massey family members. Massey said his family would have an opportunity to speak at the hearing. I'll conclude the first half of our reading of the Decatur Herald Review today with the weather. Decatur 4-day forecast. Today, a shower in the a.m., wind north-northeast 7 to 14 miles per hour, a high of 77. Tonight, partly cloudy, wind north-northeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, a low of 55. Tuesday, partly sunny and nice, wind northeast 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 80, low of 60. Wednesday, a straight p.m. thunderstorm, wind south-southwest 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 80, low of 63. And Thursday, a couple of showers, wind northwest 6 to 12 miles an hour, high of 82 and a low of 61. The Almanac statistics on Saturday, temperature high of 80, low of 65. The normal high and low are 83 and 65. The record high was 105 in 1953, and the record low was 40 degrees in 1980. Precipitation, a trace on Saturday. Month to date, 6 inches and 16 one-hundredths. Normal month to date, 3 inches and 29 hundredths. Year to date, 23 inches and 49 hundredths. Normal year to date, 19 inches and 40 hundredths. The record of this date, rainfall is 1 inch and 14 in 1961. Cooling degree days. Degree days are an indicator of energy needs. The more of the total degree days, the more energy is necessary to cool. Saturday, 8 cooling degree days. Month to date, 144. Normal month to date, 143. Since January 1, 270. Normal since January 1, 241. We will now take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 22, 2026.